Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Monday, October 10, 2022. I'm Naima Latif, and our top story, of course, today is Indigenous Peoples Day, better known as Columbus Day for the many who are off of work as a result of the official federal holiday entitled Columbus Day. But there has been a change in perspective on how this day has been named and how it should be remembered in the future. But first, our top story, Rainbow Push, is leading a voting caravan today. In Chicago, the Rainbow Push Coalition and the Transformative Justice Center bus and supporters will leave the Rainbow Push Coalition headquarters at 930 East 50th Street in Chicago at 1 p.m. and will head for the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners Supersite, 191 North Clark Street, for a 1:30 p.m. press conference. The route will go from 50th and Drexel Boulevard, north to Pershing Road, west on Pershing Road to Dr. Martin Luther King Drive, north to Cermak Road west to Michigan Avenue, Michigan Avenue north to Ida B. Wells, west to Dearborn, north on Dearborn to Randolph, west on Randolph to LaSalle, and north on LaSalle to Lake, east on Lake to Clark, and then it will park on Clark between Lake and Randolph. And this press conference is going to discuss the National Get Out the Vote Tour. Reverend Jackson and Bishop Tavis Grant, Interim National Executive Director for the Rainbow Push Coalition, have partnered with the Transformative Justice Coalition, the National Newspaper Publishers Association, the Black Voters Matter, the American Policy Forum, the National Organization of Concerned Black Men, the Hip Hop Caucus, and the League of Women Voters to tour 26 cities. And this was kicked off Saturday, October 8th, and will be ending in Jacksonville, Florida. The family of Ahmaud Arbery is also joining the tour. Reverend Jackson will talk about the importance of early voting, which runs through November 8th on Election Day. So as part of this national Get Out the Vote motorcade, today motorists are kicking off this event by leaving the Rainbow Push Coalition headquarters at 1 p.m. and heading for the Board of Elections Supersite. Each car will have a placard bearing a picture of the late Representative John Lewis, whose mantra, "Make Good Trouble," is plastered on the National Get Out the Vote tour bus. Reverend Jackson and his supporters will meet up with attorney Barbara Arnwine, president and founder of the Transformative Justice Center, and co-chair Daryl Jones, who are on the National Votercade Boast Tour. Reverend Jackson is also asking people to donate more water for Jackson, Mississippi residents, where after 7 weeks, the boil water order has been lifted, and residents say they still need bottled water until their lead pipes are replaced. So this is a time where people are being urged to start the early voting process. In a number of instances, there have been charges of voter suppression, whether it be closing some of the polling places or redistricting. So this move to begin early voting will circumvent many of those activities that may be seen as suppressing the vote. This is a day where the indigenous people of America across the nation are remembering. They are remembering that they were here first. And so for those who are celebrating this day as Columbus Day, Indigenous Peoples Day has arisen as a day to redefine what happened in America. Many cities and states are observing this day as Indigenous Peoples Day. Some of the history behind it was reported in the New York Times, so that those who are unaware may become aware that not everybody is applauding Christopher Columbus for his arrival. In an article in the New York Times by Melina Delkic, she says, 1 year after President Biden became the first U.S. president to formally commemorate Indigenous Peoples Day, more than a dozen states recognize some version of the holiday in lieu of Columbus Day. More than 130 cities have adopted the holiday, choosing to heed calls from indigenous groups and other activists not to celebrate Christopher Columbus, the Italian navigator after whom the holiday is named. They say he brought genocide and colonization to communities that had been in the Americas for thousands of years. Many around the country, however, still celebrate Columbus Day or Italian Heritage Day as a point of pride. Some members of indigenous communities say recognizing the day, which this year is on Monday, October 10th, does not go far enough. It is not yet a federal holiday, though there are two bills in Congress, each one in the House and Senate, that propose to make it one. So those who are, in fact, celebrating this day, as it's been traditionally called Columbus Day, have a bit of history to learn, continues reporter, columnist Melina Delkic of the New York Times. Typically on the second Monday of October, Indigenous Peoples Day recognizes the indigenous communities that have lived in the Americas for thousands of years. It became increasingly popular as a replacement for Columbus Day, which was meant to celebrate the explorer who sailed with a crew from Spain in three ships, the Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria in 1492. In a proclamation for this year's holiday issued on this past Friday, President Biden said that Indigenous Peoples Day is intended to honor the sovereignty, resilience, and immense contributions that Native Americans have made to the world. But he added that we have more to do to help lift tribal communities from the shadow of our broken promises, to protect their right to vote, and to help them access other opportunities that their ancestors were long denied. Before the president's initial proclamation last year, many U.S. cities and states were observing Indigenous Peoples Day. Colleges and companies have increasingly recognized it. South Dakota is believed to be the first state to have officially recognized the day as Native American Day in 1990. Native Americans make up about 9% of the state's population, according to recent census figures. Alaska, Oregon, and Vermont are among the states that also officially established the day as a holiday. Many other states recognize it through proclamations. Cities like Berkeley, California, Seattle, and Minneapolis also were early adopters. And this information is, again, from the New York Times. Columnist Melina Delkic. Many Native nations have been protesting the erecting of statues or the continued placement of statues honoring not only Christopher Columbus, but many who made war against the native people of the nation. So for those who are still unsure as to how we should frame this history for our youth, and how do we change what's been written in the history books that we've been studying for decades, perhaps we should ask the Native people what they think. And perhaps they should be among those who are teaching the history of this land, which was happening thousands of years before the arrival of Europeans. Continues Melina Delkic on the topic of the question, how do indigenous groups feel about the day? Well, activists in cities such as Denver and Seattle have protested Columbus Day for years, and in many cases have fought to gain recognition for Indigenous Peoples Day. Unofficial celebrations of indigenous cultures have also taken place, including on New York's Randall's Island. The Navajo Nation, the city's largest tribe with about 400,000 people, has long voiced its support for renaming the day. Transforming Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day will encourage young Navajos to have pride in the place and people they come from and the beauty they hold within, said Jonathan Ness, the president of Navajo Nation, last year in a statement before Mr. Biden's first proclamation. However, some say mere observance of the day doesn't do enough and point out that no American president has explicitly apologized for the country's treatment of indigenous people. Others call it an important first step. So if you are celebrating this day, you have an opportunity to redefine it in your own mind as the Indigenous Peoples Day, and it's an opportunity to define it to your children and to share some information about the great nations that existed well before the coming of Columbus. Well, in Los Angeles breaking news, Neri Martinez steps down as the L.A. City Council President. L.A. City Council President Neri Martinez stepped down from her powerful position today, this morning, Monday morning, a day after incendiary leaked audio exploded into public Sunday. It appears that she will remain on the 15-member legislative body. The move will almost certainly trigger behind-the-scenes jockeying at City Hall over who will replace her, along with further questions about whether she retains her seat on the council. And City Council Member Martinez reiterated her apologies in a Monday morning statement, saying she was truly ashamed. She said, "I ask for forgiveness from my colleagues and from residents of this city that I love so much. In the end, it is not my apologies that matter most. It will be the actions I take from this day forward. I hope that you will give me the opportunity to make amends," she said. "Therefore, effective immediately, I am resigning as president of the Los Angeles City Council." The leaked audio involved three Los Angeles council members and a top labor leader. Council Representative Martinez is heard making racist statements and disparaging other politicians, upending politics a month before a critical city election and bringing the crucible of race relations back into the center of municipal debate. On Sunday night, Councilman Gil Cedillo, who was in the meeting, issued his own apology. He said, "While I did not engage in the conversation in question, I was present at times during this meeting last year. It is my instinct to hold others accountable when they use derogatory or racially divisive language. Clearly, I should have intervened. I failed in holding others and myself to the highest standard. The hurtful and harmful remarks made about my colleague's son were simply unacceptable. We choose public life, but our family should always be off limits and never part of the political discourse. And this he said in a text to the Los Angeles Times. And, of course, the Los Angeles Times reports that Martinez's resignation arrived at a key moment for City Hall. As many as 5 council members could depart by the end of the year, depending on the outcome of the November 8th election. 4 council members are stepping down, while a 5th, Councilman Mish O'Farrell, is in a tough re-election fight. Councilwoman-elect Eunices Hernandez, who defeated Cedillo in June, said she wants to see the council have, quote, an intermediate caretaker as president until the end of the year when she and the other new council members will be seated. Hernandez said Councilman Paul Krikorian would make a good caretaker in the coming months. Said Hernandez, in January, when the new council is on board, we should do a vote, and I would be interested in seeing Marquise's leadership. She said, referring to Councilman Marquise Harris Dawson. And this is a story that appeared in the Los Angeles Times. Across the nation, there are shakeups in government, and any mistake can turn the tide in an election. Knowing this, many are very cautious about the things they say, the places they appear, what they may express in conversations, and any type of reference to race is being highly scrutinized. So therefore, there are those who are making an effort to be as conscious as possible about how they are handling issues of race. And today, as many are recognizing that this is traditionally a day for Italian American pride, and it's also a day that indigenous people have protested giving Italian people credit for discovering their country, President Biden's setting the tone with his proclamation made it clear that the elected officials, especially those who may have a large Italian population, may have to walk a tightrope between being ethnically correct in their expression of respect for indigenous people and their expression of respect for Italian people who have for the last several centuries taken credit for the expansion of America by Europeans who in fact came bringing a new culture, way of life, and ultimately a new government. How will this be addressed in our school systems? Will the calendars be changed to reflect Indigenous Peoples Day as opposed to Columbus Day? Will it require a new law that designates this as officially Indigenous Peoples Day as opposed to Christopher Columbus Day? Across many cities, statues honoring Christopher Columbus and others who made war against the indigenous people are being removed. How will history be taught when it comes to American history, the expansion of the British Empire into the Americas and the ultimately pushing off of the land of the indigenous people and the establishment of a government that was initially a satellite of the British Empire and later became an independent nation. So there are many questions that will need to be answered by educators as well as those who are championing the cause of some type of truth and reconciliation that needs to happen in America to acknowledge that there was a nation built on wrongs and abuse of other indigenous nations, as well as the transatlantic slave trade that made possible the rapid growth of the American economy. For those who are seeking to find out where they can get more support for the distress created by the hurricanes and other natural disasters, there are organizations that are offering relief. In addition to FEMA, the federal agency that is coming to the rescue, and many of those citizens who have relocated are now seeking ways they can continue to survive until they can begin to either repurchase or rebuild. So organizations for disaster relief are making known that they are seeking to assist UNICEF. But you can go to unicefusa.org and determine how to receive assistance. A big part of UNICEF's mission to save and protect the world's most vulnerable children extends to children's mental health, an area of growing concern in the midst of global conflict, the COVID-19 pandemic, and climate change. These existential threats are taking a heavy toll on children and raising concerns about the mental health of a generation. Today, 1 in 7 children ages 6 to 18 have a diagnosable mental health condition. Most go unrecognized and untreated. Consider living through the war in Ukraine. Children who were at school one day and running for their lives the next. Children who have witnessed brutality and destruction. Children who have lost loved ones. Well, UNICEF has made a difference, saving more children's lives than any other humanitarian organization in 190 countries and territories and 75 years helping children. UNICEF understands that children exposed to trauma and war need mental health support. Fears and anxieties that arise in times of stress can have long-term effects. What happens in childhood can last a lifetime. While millions of children have escaped Ukraine, that doesn't mean they left it behind. And, of course, for those who wish to support the efforts of UNICEF, they can go to unicefusa.org. There are children who are suffering the effects of being displaced from Hurricanes Ian and many others that are ravaging the South and spreading across the nation and continuing to displace homeowners. How do children handle the disaster of seeing pets as well as friends neighbors struggling and some perhaps even injured during the disasters that are plaguing the communities of Puerto Rico and the state of Florida? And how prepared are families when it comes to finding support and getting help? And do families have relatives that are helping them to relocate? One thing that we learn from these disasters is that all of our technology that we use to communicate and to send out information could also be used to assist. Networks of support can be built so that people can find family members that may have gotten separated during a disaster, such as a war or a weather disaster. Are we willing to build those infrastructures so that when parents and children get separated, they can be reunited? And all of the technology, from face recognition technology to fingerprint technology, and all of the other tracking systems that have been created for marketing purposes, can we now use them for assisting families that need help? All of the electronic funds transferring devices and systems that get needed money to those who don't have it and make it possible for everyone to communicate across distances with just the technology of a cell phone? Are we able to use what we have to help people stay connected and to empower them to then rebuild? These are some of the questions that citizens can ask those who are running for elected office, and some of those who are stating that they want to be in leadership position can address how they would handle the latest disasters, from the war in Ukraine to the hurricanes in Puerto Rico and all of the disasters that our children face day to day with gun violence. These are the concerns of the voting population. So when that caravan, that get out the vote caravan, comes through your city, perhaps you want to join in and make sure you vote early so that you can make a difference in this upcoming election. Well, that is all for today. We want to remind you to listen in every day, 1 o'clock p.m. to 1:30 p.m. Central Time, to On-Air Daily News. Feel free to call in 515-605-9749. That's 515-605-9749. And share your good news. Is your organization performing a charitable act or a rescue act? Is your organization performing an educational service? Is your organization supplying a need? Feel free to call with your good news so that we may share it. On Air Daily News empowers you with transformative news and interactive radio shows that you can share your opinion about what's happening in the world today. I'm Naima Latif with On Air Daily News this Monday, October 10, 2022, Indigenous Peoples Day. Until tomorrow, enjoy the rest.